I know there are going to be a lot of questions about compliance, because that is really much of what we do, and all the rest of the term, every disorder we talk about, we're going to talk about the specific things that are most likely to come up. But I'll tell you, you will get quite a ways towards compliance if you set up the assignment right, follow through appropriately, and really follow the steps. And also, it really helps if you believe, if you really believe that what you're doing is going to help this person get towards your goal. It's kind of, we are sort of, in some ways, we're coaches, in some ways, we're salesmen. You know? If we don't buy it, and I've had some, and we'll talk again in some of the disorders, there's some techniques that I've had supervisees who were really dubious. They were really skeptical. They didn't believe it. You know, they didn't really think it was going to be helpful. And guess what? Their patients didn't follow through on those assignments. So I try to stick to, I try to be pumped, you know. I try to, you know, I'm not going to ask somebody to do something or suggest or negotiate, and even if they suggest something, if I don't think it's going to be helpful, we're going to talk about it. Because why would they do something if I don't even think it's worth doing? So now we all, it seems to me that a lot of the books, a lot of the things you read, they talk about the beginning of treatment. And you get this sense that you just do the same thing ad infinitum. So I want to talk a little bit about the process of therapy, how things evolve. Because session one shouldn't look the same as the last session. Things should be shifting over the course of therapy. And, you know, we don't really expect our patients, I'm not going to say it's never happened, because it has, but I don't generally expect my patients are going to go home into their lives and do thought sheets every day for the rest of their life, or do relaxation training every day for the rest of their life. Although I have had some people who really benefit and really do. I mean, I had this one cute guy who came in. He terminated. He was having some difficulties. He came in like 2 years. He hadn't seen me in 2 years. He brought in a stack of relaxation logs like this. He'd been doing relaxation every day and writing it down for 2 years. It was, you know, most people don't do that. And they don't need to do that necessarily. So what should change? What should evolve? Well, first, airtime. Okay? Just how much we talk. Okay? At the beginning of therapy, there's a lot to explain. We have a lot of questions and guidance. And, you know, clients don't come in and say, you know, I know cognitive behavior therapy. I know I have, you know, have to do ABC. And, you know, they don't know. They don't know what this treatment is. They don't know what you're supposed to do. So we talk more at the beginning of therapy. First session, we even ask, you know, about the agenda first and say our items first. First homework assignment, we might say, hey, we found that people who are really depressed seem to do better if they get their muscles moving. You know, one option would be to have you take a walk around the block each day. Does that sound okay? You know, we're more active, okay? Therapist does more talking, hopefully, beginning of therapy. But as the therapy progresses, if things are going as they should be, that should shift. It should, and it's good to know what should happen so you can tell if it's not happening and address it. So what should happen naturally is, after a few sessions, I should be able to say, so Sarah, what would you like to talk about today? And the patient should be able to say, to give me, well, I want to follow up on my homework and I want to, you know, work on my goal of being more active. They should pick up the ball and run with it. Speaking of which, nobody reminded me I was supposed to take roll. Nothing, okay. So, Tanji's here. Richard?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Melanie? Yeah? Sarah? Mm-hmm. I just used Sarah's
I did look that up.
Zanab? Okay. Blythe? Blythe. Okay. Blythe had to leave. Okay. And let me count. So I might not have to finish. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Ugh, I can't count that high. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Well, there's somebody next to me who's not here.
Yes.
Who left?
Yeah.
And this one, too.
Yeah.
Okay, Tanya left, and she told us about it.
Okay.
Blythe didn't. Okay, all right, so I better, because I have here 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Okay, all right, I'll continue. Ajiba? Yes. Melinda? Yes. No, she didn't. Nazreen, yes. Brittany, yes. Christopher, no. David, John.
Right here.
I know. So wait, I couldn't. Let me count. So I said 12, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So there really were two different people who left.
Three total left. So the...
Well, maybe somebody...
That's the Priscilla who didn't sign in.
She Priscilla just didn't sign in, so she didn't sign in, and she left early. She doesn't get the credit. But, and the other two stayed from some, at least some of the morning, right?
Till lunch.
Okay. All right. Okay. Sorry about that, but if I don't do... See, this is... Yeah, I'm a coping skill. If I don't do what I say right away, it's gone. So, okay, back to shifting throughout the course of therapy. You should be able to say, what would you like to talk about? And they get it, and they suggest what's important to them. You should also be able to say, what would be a good homework for you this week? Because it should build on the previous one. And homework, by the way, isn't something you have to set right at the end. Let's just say you're talking about how she gets into trouble because she doesn't speak up at work. And you could pause in the middle of the session and say, I wonder if that lends itself to a homework assignment. How could we deal with that? And set it. Now, if you set some things in the middle of the session, just be sure at the end of the session that you review that homework. Okay, so what we agreed earlier was that you were going to try, you know, scheduling a meeting with your boss and doing X, you know, talking about XYZ. Does that still seem like a good idea? You know, what's going to get in the way? You think you can do it? And also, what else did we come up with? You know, ask them. So they really should be able to supply their own, because it should be growing naturally out of the visit. You shouldn't be pulling random interventions out of the hat, you know? It should grow, and they should be able to say, well, I think I need to, I've been exercising twice a week, so I think next week I'm ready to do three times a week. Okay, you know, or something. They should be doing more of the talking in the session. You know, and you should just be able to say, so what got you into trouble? And then, you know, what, you get them trained, right? If you're doing it right, you'll have them trained, and they won't just say, I felt depressed. They'll say, well, on Tuesday afternoon, my boss walked in, and my heart plummeted, and I thought, uh-oh, I'm going to get fired. And I got, you know, and they'll be pinpoint, without you even asking, they'll be picking a moment, because you've been so consistent about picking a specific moment to target. That's if they're getting it, okay? And if that's not happening, let's just say it's the fourth session, and every time you say, what would you like to talk about this session, they go, I don't know, Doc, you tell me. It's the fourth session. I'm going to put that on the agenda. I'm going to say, you know, I ask you every week. You know, I am interested in what you want to talk about, and you're deferring to me. Let's look at that. What's that about? I mean, I might even make it, and I often do, because there are lots of people who really do want to see us as the experts and just do what they're told and not be collaborative. I might explain how it's important to get their input and ask, and I might suggest as a homework assignment that they write down an item or two on a piece of paper that they want to talk about that session. Or similarly, if time after time, okay, what would be a good homework assignment? I don't know. It's like, well, what did we do last week? Well, here we do. So what do you think we might, do this week? I don't know. Then maybe you need to stop and say, wait, what's going on here? Are you on board with this? What would it mean if you provided, and you need to process it some and put that on the agenda. Because really, there's something going on if they're not with the program and taking the ball and running with it. It's not that complicated. There should be a shift in the depth of the cognitions. Now, Jim talked this morning about underlying assumptions and core schema. Be careful. When I talk about the process of over therapy, I'm not talking about skipping steps. So if you, and I know there are different approaches, we do not take a schema session one schema approach, okay? And there are some people who, and some people seem to be able to pull it off, Albert Ellis, session one, aha! You believe in loving women who love men who love you. No, that's bullshit. Cut it out. Okay? Well, Beck's approach is much more guided discovery and letting, and not assuming that we know their assumptions, and letting them see how they evolve from their automatic thought. But let's say, so what happens is, that they start out, and you want to start out with a specific moment and the thoughts that pop into their head, because that's what has power in the moment. But after a while, the patterns should be emerging. And so if you go week after week, and and a great example that happens all the time is with panic disorder. Person, they notice their heart rate, and they think, I'm going to die. And their response is, I haven't died yet. Okay. And then, if you go week after week, and it's the exact same thought, I'm going to die. You're not getting anywhere. So if you're not getting broader patterns, if you're not getting over time, getting their more assumptions, their more schema, then again, something's wrong. You're stuck.
So can you say that again? There should be a shift in the something cognition?
The depth of the cognition. So in other words, we start with the automatic thoughts, and you don't want to skip that. Honestly, the problem with going right to assumptions, and I know people would argue with me, but really, the thing is, A, you might be guessing, and you think you know, and you think you're right, and you might be right, but it's not coming from the patient if you go too quickly. And also, people will agree with you because you're an authority figure and they respect you, and they haven't come up with it themselves. So they're saying it's more of the whatever you say, doc. Well, I think you care too much about what other people think of you. Oh, yeah, okay. All right, then you need to change to thinking about what you think of you. Okay. It becomes, and as soon as you, if you end up on the Oprah level, no offense to Oprah, but, if you end up on the talking generally about you know, issues in general. If you start there and stay there, people can talk. I mean, people love to talk in general because they know that doesn't really, they don't really have to change. That's why I really like starting with that one moment when you're deciding whether to eat the hot fudge sundae or when you're miserably depressed or anxious. Let's look at that one moment and not all the past and all the things you've heard about whatever affects whatever, but let's look at you in that moment, what's popping in your head. That's very powerful. But over time, you've kind of worked with those, and then you do get to deeper levels. But those deeper, the difference is those, over time, those deeper, the assumptions, the schema, it's theirs. They came up, it comes from their experience, not just you saying, ah, well, people with panic are usually afraid of XYZ, so it's probably that they have this control issue or whatever. They might. But even if you're right, it has more meaning to the person when they come up with it rather than you pulling it out of the hat or lecturing or being the authority figure. So, but if it stays really superficial, something's missing. And you want to look at that and say, okay, now this is the 37th time we've dealt with the cognition I'm going to die. Now, somehow this isn't going anywhere. We need to look at that. And you do. Again, some of these things really happen naturally if you're on target and they're on target. And if it's not, then it needs to be on the agenda and looked at. Not in a punitive way. Boy, you're shallow. That's not going to get you far. Your thoughts are stupid. Elvis could pull it off, really. The New York tax. I mean, he was. I mean, boy. But, you know, I just have a feeling if I were his patient, I would just walk. In fact, I don't, when I'm in a workshop, if somebody gets all authoritarian and tells me what I'm thinking and feeling or tells me what to do, it took me years before I was willing to do the mindfulness raisin exercise because I don't like being bounced around. So I don't think I would have been a good match. It might have been amusing to watch, but I never lived in New York or had the money to see Elvis, so not going to happen. So, but that's not what Beck does. Beck's got the kinder, gentler guided discovery. And honestly, unless you've got a particular personality and you can pull it off, it's very doable. I think pretty much anyone who works at it can do guided discovery. Not everybody can pull off New York taxi driver kind of leaping. And to be honest, I think Ellis was often right about his assumptions. About when he said, okay, this is what you're... he was clearly very bright. But it's still him telling the patient rather than the patient telling him. So, over time. And then over time, the person should gradually be doing thought sheets in their head. And a little more naturally than on paper. Now, don't buy this in the first time you've assigned thought sheets. I mean, obvious people, oh, I can do that in my head. Well, the truth is, if people, and not everybody writes, but if people aren't writing, then I would recommend a tape recorder and recordings in some manner, because if they just say, oh yeah, I can do it all internally like that, well, then if it's not working, it's so much harder to pinpoint what's going wrong. And they're not going to remember it. We don't have a record. There's something beautiful about you get a piece of paper and it encapsulates the entire issue in that moment with the five-column thought sheet. You know? I mean, you've got it all there. And so if it didn't help or they felt worse doing it, you can look at, okay, is it because they weren't quoting the thoughts that happened in the moment? Is it because their responses were not convincing? Is it because they didn't stick with it long enough? Are we missing the point? You have data that you can use to figure it out. So, what I'm talking about as the natural process of therapy is when the person It starts, you know, and it's only when the thought sheets or cognitive restructuring is part of their working towards their goals, and they've done it consistently. But then what will happen is a person will come in and they'll say, well, you know, I was really anxious before I went out to a bar last night. But, you know, I really didn't have time to write a thought sheet, but I said to myself, uh-oh, people are going to look at you and think you're weird. And I said to myself, you know what? People have other things to think about besides how you look. And I talked myself into going. So he didn't write the thought sheet, but he did it in his head. And you can see that he really did, you know, he went through. And the truth is, part of what we do as therapists is we get people to artificially do the things that people who don't have that problem do naturally. I mean, we all get anxious about certain things, and if we don't have a particular anxiety disorder, we probably say to ourselves the same, you know, we just naturally kind of say, okay, come on, you know, what's the big deal? You can handle it, and we, you know, convince ourselves to go, we do it naturally. So we're kind of teaching people to do the things that maybe somebody else who doesn't have that problem does naturally. So it makes sense that over time, they do it more naturally. Or if they're doing activity scheduling, and once they see being more social, being more active helps, they might not need to write down their whole week schedule. And they keep, you know, but as long as they keep doing it. Now, I've had patients who've said, you know what, doing the activity schedule helps me stay organized. It helps me make sure I get some pleasure in every day. And they want to do activity schedules through the whole treatment. Or this one guy obviously found it helpful to write his relaxation down so he'd do it every day. Fine, I'm not going to object. But most people, they move from a little less writing and a little more in their heads. Yes.
So, question about activity scheduling. I did that with one of my clients who was like total, like kind of wow moment for her. Okay.
And so he was
she did activity scheduling. She did it. It was just like life changing for her. Uh-huh. She realized. And so 1 week, and it totally changed about how she thinks and who was having problem with feeling like lack of self worth. So she did that, and then after that, just 1 week she did it, she kind of like, she found out about herself and everything, but she didn't do it afterwards. She kind of like, yeah, I got it now. It's not exactly what I think. I do accomplish a lot and everything. Would you keep, like...
Then you always, by the way, I'm always, the first question is going to be, what's your goal for therapy?
What's her goal for therapy? It's self-esteem. She has
Do remember, and people, even though I spell it out, self-esteem is not a very good therapy goal. I have said that. People put, so I know it's too general, I know, and I'm asking you in the moment, but remember, that's very general. We don't know what people mean by that. But okay, it's in that area. So the question is, if somebody does their homework one time and they think, okay, I've got it, I don't need to do it anymore. The question is, are you convinced? I mean, really, you know, you know the patient better than I would, or I do at this point. If you think, you could do an experiment, you can say, are you convinced that you can maintain that attitude all week without, or maybe have them just, you could modify it. You could say, well, okay, well, you don't have to write down every hour, but what if you write down just times when you're feeling self-doubt and also times when you're feeling really good about yourself? So, you know, you don't have to write down the fives, but maybe the tens and the twos. I mean, so there's no one answer. You know your patient. But if they just say, okay, I don't need to do it anymore. You want to say, make, well, you know, are you sure you can maintain? And then if they come back in a week or the next session and they're feeling worse, it's like, oops, maybe we need to give it more time.
Okay.
But you want to listen, too. You don't want to just say, no, you need to do it for 5 weeks because the manual says you have to do it for 5 weeks. She might not need to. Proof is in the pudding. That's what I love about the approach. It's behavioral. You know, it's got that experiment. If it works, fine, if you can keep it up. Now, so they should now, I don't like to give up completely if someone's using cognitive restructuring as a big part of their treatment for, you know, whether it's depression or feeling badly about themselves. I hate to go to zero written thought sheets because you don't want people to lose this skill, okay? So, what I might do is, instead of doing daily, maybe over time we'd go to once a week, or maybe even once a month, because you want them to have the skill at their fingertips if they need it, okay? But again, it's an individual, you know, some people just, you know, they get it, they're doing it in their head, and they don't need to keep doing it. I do always like to have that, you know, if they found a particular technique to be useful, I want to make sure they've got the basics well enough so that if they get into trouble in the future, they'll know exactly how to pick it up again. So I hate to go from daily to zero. But, you know, tapering it up. I mean, you know, people aren't going to go through life writing down all their thoughts and feelings or their relaxation or their exercise. Yeah.
I've done a few of these, and I just want to know the five. Are you talking about the rational response and then the outcome?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I kind of like this. Show me the evidence for the automatic thought. Show me the evidence that's against it. When you say rational response, I'm not sure.
Well, I hate that phrase, too. And
okay.
To be honest, I am lazy, and I don't feel like making new sheets. But and often I just take a sheet of notebook paper and scribble. And I tell people, rational isn't the point. That's an Ellis term. Okay, and I'm sure Jim's probably already given you this example, but I use this all the time with my patients. It's not really about rational. Now, I personally believe, like, 100% that I will die someday, okay? I do believe. I believe I will die, okay? I can consider that a very rational thought. I'm going to die someday. It's a rational thought. It's true, okay? I believe it to be true. But if I spend all day, repeating it to myself, I wake up in the morning, you know you're going to die someday. I say it to myself all day. It's not going to be a very pleasant day. So it's not really, I mean, you can have totally irrational thoughts that don't get you into trouble. And you can have rational thoughts that, you know, like, I'm not the most important person in the world. That's rational. I don't think I really am, but I don't need to, you know, I don't need to beat myself with it. I screwed up yesterday. Boy, did I say something stupid yesterday. Yeah. I'm sure. But do I need to repeat it all day? It can be true, it can be rational, and not useful. So And you can change those any way you want to fit your style. And really, it is more about, is it adaptive? Is it helpful? What's the evidence, you know, that this is actually true, but also what's the evidence that it's useful or that it's helpful? Because there are a lot of thoughts that are true that do not make for a healthy lifestyle. Like, you know, I could crash going home on the freeway. Well, that's really going to help anxiety, right? I mean, it's true, I could. I don't want to think about all the different ways. So yeah, absolutely. And really, make this stuff your own. Seriously, you can make your own little forms and copy them. I mean, you don't need, It's true, some people do lots more columns. Some people do fewer. You could scribble on paper, whatever works for you. The idea is, though, and that this really makes a difference, pick a moment in time, not in general, what do you think when you don't exercise? No. Tuesday afternoon, when you made that decision, what were you feeling? What quote the thoughts going through your mind? Now let's look at them. And let's look at them as if you were looking at them with a friend or, you know, objective, whatever. But you can look at them all different ways. So, excellent point. So with the process, we have goals. Now, I don't know about you guys, but my patients end up with lots more goals than they start out with. I mean, especially when they see how powerful this treatment is, really. And that's why sometimes I'll get, comes up all the time, I'll have either a psychodynamic or eclectic, I'm never quite sure what they mean by, you know, those, but somebody will say, you know, I'm seeing this patient in ongoing therapy, but I want to send them to you for just their fear of flying, or just their panic disorder, just this, but I'm going to keep seeing them in general. It's a real problem, because if we, and it can be that specific, it can be panic's a bigger issue. Panic, I'm not even going to touch, you know, because it's like we don't do panic without dealing with their depression, you know. It's like, and I'm not interested in pissing off my referral sources, you know, and I don't want to be seen as stealing patients. But the problem is, even if I pick something as specific as fear of flying, okay, clear cut, right? They come to me, we deal with their fear of flying, they take care of it, they realize that was much more useful than the past 3 years with my other therapist. And then it ends up with, you know, it's not good politically, because the thing is that, so my patient, you know, everybody comes in with something pressing, you know, they have their top goals, and that's great. I'm collaborative about that. But over the course of therapy, it depends, of course, on their resources, their insurance, their time frame, whatever, but a lot of my patients will knock out. I just did this with a guy. He couldn't even believe some of his original goals. He's like, shh, I've been doing that for ages. I know. And he was like, he's compulsive. So we're on like his third page, like single space of goals. But we're knocking him off. I mean, he's achieving them. And like, it changed his life. He's like, shh, I can't even... Did I really? I couldn't do that? It's like, that's your goal is. So over the course of treatment, you might achieve your goals depending on the time frame. You can say, okay, great, we did it, you know, let's do some booster sessions, but basically we're done. Or you can say, now you've got this thing, you know, you've accomplished this. Is there anything else that you'd really like to work on? And often people will come up with multiple goal lists. Now sometimes people really, I'm not saying everybody solves all their problems right away. Somebody's insurance can run out and it's like, okay, we made good headway. Here's how you can continue until the end of the year, and then we'll pick up again in January when you have more sessions. That can happen too. But so the treatment can change drastically. Because we might start with, you know, something that feels safe, you know, so fear of flying or highway driving or something that seems little. And then, you know, it becomes clear that their marriage is a disaster or, you know, they're, you know, anxious in all kinds of other ways. And so then we reevaluate the goals. And so you can definitely do that. If there's time and resources for that. Now, the other thing that comes up over the course of therapy is the issue of termination. When and how do you end? Okay? And you'll get some hints for things like breaks in therapy, they go on vacation, you go on vacation. You know, if it's a very, very needy, depressed patient who just falls apart, if you're out of town, then, you know, you realize, whoa, this is going to be, you know, could be a real issue, as opposed to the person who kind of comes and goes, you know. So you'll get hints. But at some point, you know, you've accomplished the goal or made good headway. Some terminations we don't have control over. So I went on maternity leaves. I didn't ask my patients' permission. And they were significantly long. So, you know, most, you know, people, it wasn't just a couple weeks that we took a break, you know. I mean, and some of them said to me, you didn't ask me. And it's like, true, I didn't. Or they're moving, I'm moving, you're leaving the agency, whatever. But if possible, we like, and like everything else in cognitive therapy, we would like termination to be a collaborative process, if at all possible. So the idea is, when are we, you know, have we achieved or made good headway on the goals? Again, if there's no external reason, we can discuss it with the patient. And the idea, really, usually, I really prefer not to meet like regularly, every week, and then zero. I grew up with that. I mean, when I was a new therapist, that's what you did. You saw your patient every week or twice a week, and then you terminated and you went from, you know, twice a week or once a week to zero. There was no fading. There were no booster sessions. And guess what? People would have crises. They would have right before termination, and they'd fall apart. Oh, well, we have to go back to, you know, it comes. And I don't see any real reason, even if you only have 6 visits because of their EAP or whatever, okay, you can do a few in a row and then space them out a little so that the patient isn't just like, oh my God, what am I going to do without it? They have some evidence. Well, wait, once a patient can go 2, 3, 4 weeks without a session, they're managing. They're dealing without you. So, just because it's cognitive therapy, we don't focus on transference in the relationship. Believe me, your patients will get attached. That's not, if you're doing a good job, and, you know, because we're still doing good listening skills and empathy. What really struck me was I ran a phobia clinic at University Hospitals for many years, and part of the family practice residents, every family practice resident, these were golden years, they were when, because family practice really valued behavioral health. So every family practice doc in their residency had to rotate through my clinic. And they weren't therapists, so I couldn't have them doing therapy. So all they did was they did relaxation with patients. With anxiety patients, okay? So they did a 4-session, pretty much canned, structured relaxation training with patients. Do you know, 4 sessions, the family doc, not a therapist, people would cry, people would, when they were ending, they would write them letters, how they've changed their life. They got attached. So, just, you know, the fact is that we're doing, you know, something that's very effective and useful and straightforward, and our patients get, you know, termination is a big deal. And we don't just ignore it. We don't just say, well, you know, the manual says 12 visits, goodbye. The relationship, you know, the relationship is huge. If the person doesn't trust you, if they feel like you don't trust them, if you're not listening, they're not going to follow through on any of this stuff. So, you know, we use the relationship all the way through. So termination, we spend time on it. We don't spend years like some approaches. And we don't assume that the entire treatment hinges on the transference, but we pay attention to, okay, what's it going to feel like? You know, how do we want to do this ending thing? I do like fading. I really do like, if at all possible, spacing things out. Not from the, I like to start, if at all possible, every setting I know is different. But in an outpatient private practice, I really like to start weekly because you got to get momentum and they've got to see some success or else it's just work. And if you go too long, so if they come once a month, there's, you know, one session, and then they got 29 days to muck it up, you know. So I like starting weekly. But once they're getting it, and they're moving, and they're doing their homework, then, you know, okay, should we? And sometimes it'll just happen. Well, I'll be gone next week. Oh, look, so let's make sure. That means you need to keep up that homework for 2 whole weeks. And believe me, if you think it's hard to scribble in the waiting room to make up for 1 week that you didn't do your homework, 2 weeks is even harder to remember. And then, but it's like, okay, I kept it up. I kept it up for 2 weeks. Okay, yeah. And then over time, as they achieve, you know, they might add new goals where they need a little more intensive, or they might, you know, or might not. And then you can space it as it makes sense and be collaborative about it. Well, what do you think? Do you feel ready to go 2 weeks? Do you feel ready? If a person is having financial issues with it, and I feel like they can, the proof is in the pudding. It's like, okay, we can try this, but I'm not going to cut back if you can't keep up your momentum. So, you know, can you do this? And let's look at how you can do this. And so often, if they want to save money and want to see you less, that's a little more motivation to actually do their homework. We talk about how they feel about ending. we talk about the feelings, and I sometimes will share. It depends on the patient. I'm not going to gush. I'm not going to say, I can't live without you, because that's creepy. But you know, and it has to be genuine. If the person has been really a pain in the butt and you're really glad, then I'm not going to say, you know, I'm kind of sad about ending. But if you share your feelings a little bit appropriately, professionally, it opens the door for them to share some of their feelings. And I can honestly, genuinely say for a lot of people, you know, it's kind of sad that I'm not going to be there, you know, I'm not likely to be there when you actually do graduate or when you accomplish this and when you finish and when you take that trip to Tahiti because, you know, and on an airplane. If you want to make, you know, at least give them the invitation to share how it's going to feel. I also do have more of a family practice model of therapy, and I'm clear with my patients about this. I don't believe that even if we space things out, I don't believe if we end, that's it forever. I happen to know I'm not going, except I'm not promising after 2021. I don't know where we got even in 2021. We're not going to have the money to retire, but that's another issue. But, you know, if I think I'm going to be around, I will leave the door open and say, look, you know, here's our, you know, I'm going to talk about a relapse prevention plan. You know, if you're having a problem, there's no disgrace. It's a good idea. It's smart to get back in touch, you know. Well, you don't see your doctor, you know, you don't go to your internist or your family physician weekly, you know. You might get a checkup once a year, but, you know, you have a problem. You go in, you take care of it, you go away, but you know they're there if you need them. I like that model of therapy, and believe me, when I spell that out, people use it. I have had people come back after, well, because I've just been doing this so long, you know, more than 20 years with no contact. And usually, you know, there's that phone call, and it's like, uh-oh, I use this person as a case example, did it all crash and burn? And it's usually that something new is going on, and they could use a little support, or they know they can trust me. And I think it's great. I think really we all should have, I wonder if this is the way they do it in places with socialized medicine. Probably not. But, you know, the idea of, you know, it's, I recommend everybody have a doctor, a physician, family doc or internist or somebody that they know if they got a problem, he knows them. I don't want to wait till I'm having a heart attack and then find a doctor, you know, or wait till I have a real problem. I want to know, this person already knows me, knows my history. Similarly, I think, you know, it's nice to have a therapist that you trust. And so if, you know, you did your anxiety disorder thing, but now you're having problems with your marriage, and you trust them, and you can call on them. And so that's the model. If you can get, if you can do that, it's great. So then what part of doing that is a good termination? And one of my favorite things about to do in termination is a relapse prevention plan. And I gotta tell you, patients love it. Sometimes they don't like the words, because I am going to directly talk to them about, okay, how can you handle it if you have these problems again? And they don't necessarily want to think, they're, oh, no, I'm done, I get it, you're doing great, it's great, you're no longer depressed, you're no longer panicked, whatever. But we want to be realistic. We want to know that you have a plan to catch things, if they should happen, to catch it early. Because you sure don't want to end up back where you started. And they'll usually agree to that. Again, there's no magic form. You can do it your own way. But I'm going to, if any, we can't always do this, because there are all those people who just don't show up for an appointment, don't return phone calls, and they're gone. Or, you know, they terminate without, and, you know, and you say, and I do try to get people to say, well, how about if you come in one more time so we can wrap up and come up with a plan for your future? But often people, you know, if they don't do it, they don't do it. And that doesn't mean they crash and burn. Some people don't take the time to follow, you know, don't follow through. But if possible, I love doing a formal written relapse prevention plan. And they love it too. And I don't do this in the last, I don't start this in the last visit. Because a lot of people have trouble with endings and they don't come to the last visit. So I like to start this at least the session before we're thinking we'll end. Or whenever it seems like, okay, we can kind of start wrapping this up and looking at, how are things going to go for you in the future? What I want to do, this form isn't magic on page 32, but I want to identify, okay, what could be a high-risk situation for you in the future? So what might precipitate a problem? And this is one where sometimes it's crystal clear. Sometimes it's so clear that we don't even wait to see how it goes. Like if a woman has had more than one or even one really bad postpartum depression, I'm going to say, you know what? Let's not mess with this. You get pregnant, you're having another baby, give me a call. Let's schedule before you deliver and let's have it all in place. Someone knows, there are people who really have a clear idea of what's going to throw them. You know, when your mother dies, you know, this is going to be, we know this is going to be very rough. Don't mess with it, you know. If you see it coming, or if she passes away, okay, give yourself, but really, that's a time to call. Don't wait until you're really, really depressed. Or, you know, if you lose, you know, guy has major depression every time he's lost a job. Okay, if you lose another job, don't wait a year. get in, deal with it, okay? So some people it's really obvious, but other people, they might or might not need to come back. So, but what situations have caused, have really triggered something or caused a problem in the past? What's still being challenging? What can you imagine that might really throw you? Okay, and so let's be clear about that. And how do you plan? What do you, how can you deal with those? Okay? And what I really always want is the early warning signs. I really, and I'll tell people, you do not want, you have so, you've learned so much, you've done so much, there's no reason to wait until something's a big problem. Let's catch it early on. How could you tell early on that you were going down the wrong path? And usually, again, guided discovery, usually they can tell you. Or you can look back at their initial evaluation and say, you know, when you first came in, you mentioned that first it started that you had trouble getting up in the morning, and then you were late to work. And then, you know, so would those be things to look out for? What are the danger signs? It could be thoughts, they could be feelings, putting myself down, losing my temper with my kid, whatever looks to them like it might be a bad sign. If they don't come up with ones you know about, let, you know, use guided discovery, but then say, Mom, what about if you, you know, start loading the carbs, or, you know, you're eating a ton right before bed, or, you know, you're eating to deal with your feelings. Could that be a time? Or you, you know, stop seeing your friends. You know, often a bad, you know, and people don't necessarily notice they're depressed. They just start withdrawing. If that's what happened for your person, then that could be a warning sign. And then if you notice a warning sign, what could you do? And be specific. And I really, that's the, to me, I really want a concrete plan. Now, the concrete plan needs to be things that actually helped, not things that you wished had helped. So, in other words, don't put do thought sheets if they never really did thought sheets and they didn't get into it. Don't put, you know, activity scheduling, but put the things that did help. And it doesn't have to be therapy things. It might be sure I call a friend and go out at least twice a week with someone I like. Discuss it with my partner. You know, make sure I'm doing my art. I see a lot of artists, you know. It's like, and if they're not doing their art, or reading, if someone's a reader and they love reading, they're always reading, and they stop reading, that's a danger sign. Okay, then a specific would be pick something manageable. Have some books, have some magazines, just in case of easy stuff. Save the Dostoevsky for when you're feeling in a great mood. But, you know, no, you're not going to pick up, because if you're feeling depressed and overwhelmed, maybe you want something a little more cheery and a little easier to read. And then I want to, at least the session before we terminate, if possible, to start the process, and then I'll send them home to add to it. And often they come up with great ideas I didn't think of, you know, like maybe, you know, go back to Weight Watchers, you know, see my family doc, get a tune-up of my meds, whatever seems like, you know, start making sure I'm doing the relaxation training. Pick up again with relay, whatever is the issue. The idea is, though, they have a plan in black and white. And even though at the beginning, sometimes they're kind of, they don't want to even think about getting, you know, a possible relapse or possibly having a setback, it's like, so they don't like the idea in the beginning because they want to be Pollyanna, la, la, la. But when we really spell out, but here we have a plan, a strategy of steps that, you know, and do you feel like you could do these steps? Do these make sense? They're like, it's like taking home a piece of the therapy. I'll talk to them about where you're going to put it. Is there a place you could put? I used to. This is where lazy comes in. I used to give, and this is all with adults, right, mind you. I used to have multicolored, a whole bunch of different colored folders. And I would say, pick a color. I'm going to give you a folder. You put your relapse prevention plan in any of those great thought sheets that are keepers, you know, when you're really working on a core assumption and you really hit the nail on the head, so we Xeroxed it. Put that in your folder. Put the, you know, blank forms if you, so that you'll have some thought sheets if you need to do them. You'll put them all in the folder. Now, where are you going to put that folder? And how will you remember to pull it out if you need to? It's like, it feels to them like I am giving them a piece of myself, a piece of the therapy to take home with them. And do you know, again, since I've been around for so long, people will come in with their yellow, torn, wrinkled relapse prevention plan years and years later that they actually had been referring to and got in trouble and, you know, or were having a hard time and got back in touch. So if people can maintain without it, it's not always an option. But if you can do it, it's lovely, and they do find it helpful. I had one guy, he was so depressed. It was, he had an extremely bad depression. He was not taking any chances. So he was a businessman, and he had a folder with every month of the year. And first, he wasn't going to mess around too much with termination. So he actually went from twice a week, over time, to once a week, to once every other week, once every third week, once every fourth week. He was actually went step by step until he was coming every 6 months, once a year. I mean, he just wasn't going to mess. And then when we finally terminated, he had a folder of his business, you know, of every month of the year, and he took a Beck Depression inventory and he made copies. And he put one in every month. At the beginning of every month, he did a BDI. And if he started to get depressed, even a little bit, he was going to come back. You know, he was going to call. Because he wanted to make sure he wasn't going to miss it. And, you know, that worked for him. He needed that kind of a system to feel safe. And, you know, as far as I know, he was able to pull that off. People don't necessarily need to be. I mean, really, what happens is when you start to fade, it becomes pretty obvious. 2 weeks, people can still be. In 2 weeks, people are still actively working towards their goals. Once you get down to once a month, they're reporting. They're reporting what they did on their own. They're not, and then it becomes kind of odd. Then you're on vacation, and so it gets longer. And then it becomes, you know what? They're telling you, I think we've got this. So it's not like pulling teeth. It's not like abrupt. If you can do that, it becomes pretty clear. But I do have, I leave the door open, and I say, you know, if you need to come back. And I have a number of patients, they don't schedule it, they don't plan, but they'll come in about, you know, maybe once a year. And I'll say, oh, it's been about a year. And they're like, really? Oh, I didn't know, you know. But it just, something comes up and they need a little tune-up. They come in for a session or two, go on their way. So if you can be flexible like that, great. And having a written plan makes it easier. So Kathy, who you saw this morning, right, she is very clear what would be danger signs. She's on page 33. When she was feeling normal, she was never late to work. So, and by the way, I don't know if Jim gave follow-up, but she never did go back to that job after, you know. Did he talk about this? She got the job with public radio or public television, which, you know, she really loved, and she felt like was important and meaningful, and, you know, she did great. But she knew if she got to work late even once, or skipped work and she wasn't physically sick, that was a very bad sign, because that's not her. Other people miss work all the time, and that's just their lifestyle, and that wouldn't be a good warning sign for them. But for her, she knew one time that was danger. If she had to drag herself out of bed in the morning, if she skipped meals or wasn't sleeping, if she wasn't having fun, if the idea of suicide even crossed her mind. Now, I see patients who think about suicide every single day of their lives. And they manage and they cope and they move on, you know, but they still, it's a very present thing in their life. It's, well, that wasn't the case for, you know, Kathy knew if she even thought about it, she was getting depressed. Agreeing with her boyfriend when she doesn't really mean it. She knew that was a danger sign. So what to do? So she found the thought sheets really helpful. So for her to write out some thought sheets, she put, and that would be good. She had summary thought sheets in her folder. She could reread those. She could be assertive with Rick, even over little things. She could force herself to do fun things, call and talk to a friend, spend time relaxing or playing with her son. Reread chapters. Now again, if they never did any reading, then don't put on their relapse plan. But she found a few chapters of feeling good to be helpful, so for her, that was a good review. Now, I really like to end with some kind of closing statement similar to this one, okay? Where, because you can, and I don't put myself first. I don't say, oh, the second you notice a warning sign, call me. They might not need that. But I always put therapy somewhere at the end. So for her, and often I set it up like, okay, if I try these things for a certain period of time and it doesn't work, I need to get back into therapy. Or if I go a certain length of time and I'm not getting myself to try these things, I need to be back. If I'm leaving town, it might not be with me. It might be with my agency. It might be with somebody else. But the idea is there's you always want an end to end with a but. If it's not working, I need to get more help before it gets worse. So that's hers. And the next one, totally different kind of guy. Totally different issues. He was compulsive, workaholic, terrible about with relationships. So for him, the signs would be very different. If he was working more than 60, it took us a lot of time to get him down to 60 hours of work or less a week. So for him, you know, working more than 60 would be a bad sign. You know, no time for the family or himself or the gym. Less sensitive to people's feelings, not chatting, not saying I love you to his wife or doing something caring, holding back his feelings. So his are a little more nebulous, a little longer term. Kathy was like, if I go one day late, I need to get on it. This guy, his issues were kind of longer, had a longer time frame. So you don't know that you've been working 60 hours or more a week until you've gone at least a week, right? So he decided, you know, if he notices some warning signs, he needs to think about it, get on top of those work hours, make an effort with other people, and then for him, he put, okay, if I go more than a month without doing the steps, or I do the steps and it's not working, then I call. So it can be totally different depending on the person. But the idea is have a plan with therapy as not the last resort. I don't put it that way. But, you know, I'm not assuming that everybody who sees me can only get help if they see me. They can do a lot of what they did before on their own. So if you can do a kind of plan, then there's another completely different Kevin Wine, I guess he's pronounced. He has a then and now sheet. What were some of the old negative behaviors or beliefs or emotions or symptoms or, you know, and what were some of the more, what were some of the better ones? And so if I'm falling into the old ones, then I'm going to need to do, move to some of the better ones. There are lots of formats. The idea is a concrete written reminder of what to do if things become a problem in the future. And it's really, really, people love it. It's really helpful. I do, and I, especially with something like depression, where, you know, if I, you know, if they feel comfortable sharing it with a family member so that the family member can say, you know what, you may not have noticed, I noticed these problem areas, I've noticed these warning signs, how about we pull out your folder? But only if they agree to that. And then if it's a naggy spouse who's always, oh, there you are being mentally ill again, forget that. I'm not going to. And believe me, some will do that. So, you can also have them do imagery about, okay, what happens if you lose that job? Or, you know, you can have them fantasize and, okay, how can you see yourself doing the steps to get out of it? How can you tell if it's time to call the therapist? And you want to really reframe it. It's not a failure. I love hearing from, well, I don't love hearing that people are having a rough time, but I'd sure rather have them come when there's a few warning signs than when they're back in the hospital or back on drugs or whatever it is. And so, you know, framing it as this is a positive thing that you can do for yourself, and it's no failure. One thing I also do that gives a little optimism, and I have to say it gives a benefit to me, which, I mean, why not have a benefit to me too while I'm at it? You know how when I'm setting goals, I try to engender some optimism, and I say, just imagine you're shaking my hand and saying, oh, Dr. Fleming, this was great. I've accomplished all my goals. I'm a new person. You know, what would that look like? Yeah, that, you know, it's generating some optimism that, hey, she thinks I'm going to get to that place. Well, I tell people, I say, you know what? I plan to be around for a while. Feel free. You know, if you're having danger signs, you're having a problem, feel free to call. But you can also, you know... It's also lovely to hear when things are going well. And, you know, you don't need a session for that. And I'm not, you know, but, you know, feel free to leave a voicemail saying, you know, I just want to let you know I graduated. And I just want to let you know I got that job and I'm doing really well. So I say, you know, that's okay too. It doesn't all have to be negative. Now, you're going to go on with your life, and that's great. It's not like a burden that you have to keep being posted. But, you know, feel free to just, you know, it's also okay to, you know, let me know something's good. Well, people love that. And I haven't done a survey, but I think I get more of those kind of either a card or a voicemail. I think I get more of those than your average person because I give permission and I show that I care. It's not that I'm going to give you, you know, an hour of my time to hear about how wonderful you're doing, but I tell them just, you know, and you know, it's okay to give me a quick update to say things are wonderful. And people do. You know, they'll send me a picture of their new baby, you know. It's kind of nice. We often don't get that kind of feedback. Plus, it gives them the message that I care about how they're doing. And also, I think they're going to have good things to report. So, I like sticking that in when I'm terminating. Now, questions about the process of therapy over time, the kind of general process, and about termination?
The two examples you use both are kind of like the early warning signs, and there are other things in the relapse prevention plan, you said, about high-risk situation. Is that something kind of you could just do the early warning sign and plan, or it's highly advisable to do both?
You do the warning sign and high risk. I usually just combine them both in the same thing. But, you know, so it depends on your person. Like, if they've had some really, if they've had risky things or they have risky things coming up, you want to be sure to get those on there. But, yeah, and often I don't use the sheet at all. I just take a sheet of paper and scribble. Warning signs, plan, you know. But I'm going to make sure that I end with something about, you know, how to get help and how to tell if you need that help. Now, what do you do about if people no-show? We all have that. I mean, that doesn't mean they're not going to get benefit. They're not going to maintain their benefit. I'd rather have them end with discussing it and have it be a beautiful process. But not everybody, I mean, it's a two-way street. They have some say.
You mean no-show for the last session?
Or for the last session, or if they, let's say we haven't even done. I mean, they're in the middle of treatment, and they just, they don't show. So, now, I personally, I don't believe in chasing patients. I don't beg them to come back. But I do, if somebody no-shows and they didn't call, A, I've made my policies clear, so they do get charged, okay? Whether they pay it or not might be another story, but they get charged, and they know that. I try, and I call them to find out, you know, what's going on, and do they want to reschedule. But I will call them once. I'm not going to, you know, if I'm really worried about suicide, that's a different matter. I might, you know, I mean, but if that's the case, I've probably already gotten a contract, or, you know, if I'm really concerned, I'm going to call for a safety check or whatever. But I'm talking about people who just don't come and didn't call. I'll check, I'll call, I'll leave a message. If they don't call me back, I respect that they have a choice to disappear. I will, in my message, I'll say, please give me a call so we can reschedule. And, you know, if something's going on, I'm glad to talk with you about it. And, you know, if you were thinking of ending, it'd be good for you to have, if we could write up a plan for how to maintain your game. You know, but I don't beg, because and honestly, some people disappear and other people don't. I certainly make the offer. I'm not going to chase them. And if I have to terminate, then I'm going to try to leave as much time as possible to really process their feelings and to give them permission to be angry. So if I'm leaving or retiring, that could happen someday.
You keep saying that.
What can I say? But if that, you know, I'm going to leave plenty of time. I'm going to work out. In fact, I get a call from really admire a therapist who is way in advance. I think she called in October saying that she was thinking of starting the process of retiring in January, and she wanted to make a smooth transition. And were we open to taking on some of her patients? And what she'd like is to make sure that all that's in place before she ends. And if you can do that, that's great. If you can set up, if you know, someone to take your place, or if you have an agent, that's great. So, I mean, if it's my idea to terminate, I really do think I owe it to them to give them time to process it and to help them find an alternative. Yes, Tanji?
I just have a question. Do you think, and I don't know what type of clientele you deal with, but I'm fine, like, working with the different type of clientele I deal with, when I hear you say things like that, I can see, how could I put it without being?
Oh, go to me.
Don't be nice. Okay, well, when you're dealing with clients that are, say, commercial insurance, put it that way.
Uh-huh.
When you're dealing with clients that have commercial insurance, that's easy to do, what you're saying. Close out the session, whatever. But when you're dealing with state clients, it's almost like the attitudes are so different. When you're dealing with state clients, it's more, you have to be, and it's sad to say this, but I work with a lot of them, and you have to be more aggressive and hard, like,
about what, though? I'm about when ending?
Even when you're ending, like when you say a termination, like a lot of times you have to terminate because they want to half show up. When you deal with commercial clients, they know what they have to pay. The personalities are so different. The environment is so different.
In fact, though, if you look at the literature, the cognitive therapy, the very same way, is done with all different, in all different places. And so I'm not saying, like I said before, if somebody's coming time after time and they're not following through, and we've tried, you know, I'm perfect. Oh, I can be tough, you know, and if it's time and terminate and they're dragging feet. The question, so are you asking about termination or are you asking about with non-compliance? I'm just not sure I'm getting the context.
Non-compliance.
Okay. I mean, and is it court-ordered or is it just there?
A lot of times it's not court-ordered.
Okay.
And they'll keep calling you and saying they're going to show up. And
see, the thing is that if the key is all about the goals, okay, and it's not just goals for the nice, fancy-schmancy, wealthy clients. Everybody has something they want in their life that they don't have. And the question is, if they're really not showing up, and I have no problem. In fact, I'm really pretty tight-assed about the limits. It's like, you know what? If you want to achieve these goals, you need to be here. And again, some agencies you can't. See, if your agency says you can't terminate, that's tricky. That's iffy. But a lot of agencies, you know, if they're not following through, you can terminate. And, I mean, that gives you some leverage. And it really does. The thing is, it's not only for. In fact, I sometimes feel that if you take a scale of psychologically sophisticated, to illiterate, homeless, whatever, or low IQ, you know, not mentally retarded, it is a different, it's going to be much more behavioral, but low IQ, I'm going to tell you, I think one of the toughest groups to work with, and I have a lot of experience, are mental health professionals, because they know it all. And I went, because we teach a lot, I had a period of time in my professional life where, hard to believe, I had one patient that wasn't a mental health professional. And, you know, you would think, oh, well, they're bright, they're sophisticated, they have resources, you know. But they're like, oh, they'll argue and rationalize and intellectualize up the wazoo. Where you take a dull, normal, very limited kind of person who knows they got a problem, they want this, and you tell them what needs to happen, they're more likely to follow through. So it's not as simple, is I guess what I'm saying. But to me, the key is the goals. If you haven't found something, if you find something they want, and they really believe you can make it happen, they connect. If they don't, and if they're just, you know, I mean, the question is, why are they coming in the first place? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what has to happen to get where they want to be? And you've got to sell it. Because some of those clients, I mean, when you get them with the program, they are great. And, you know, there's some pretty good research. And Jim's going to talk, we talk about substance abuse, we talk about antisocial personality. It's like, you know, some of the, you know, they're tough issues, but if you hit an adolescence, but if you, and then you've got the adolescent substance abusers, and what was the third category? Anyway, they're all in one package. The thing is, you find something they want, and it becomes, and you sell them that you can, they can make, it can make a difference, and even get them to experiment with it for 1 week or one time, it's amazing. And there is good research. So this is not just for the, you know, a lot of the early research was on college students who I don't even think count as people. You know, I mean, they're people, but they're such a select group. But we've gone way beyond that. So, and keep up now. Keep up those questions and bring in consultations, because now we're getting to, consultation where you guys can bring in and say, okay, I tried this, and you know, and here's what happened. And what I love about the consultation is that the way we try to do it, and if we're not, call us on it, because rather than just sitting and talking about what you could do, and when you bring in a patient you're having some questions about or difficulties with, our favorite type of consultation is we'll have you, the therapist, play the client, and we'll all take turns trying to intervene. And you could then, you know, so far in the role plays, we've made the clients be kind of nice, right? Starting next term, no more nice guy, okay? So you can bring in, Tanja, you can bring in some of your tough clients, and you can, you know, say, okay, here's what this guy says, and he comes in, and then you play him, and we'll try to intervene. And that's a, you know, way to really get in there and see. But honestly, I'm going to say the biggest factor is the goals and the belief that somebody can actually help me to get to this goal. And if you've got that, your goal, now, it's not always easy to get there, but it's worth the time to get there. Now we're going to take we figured out who wasn't here. We're going to take another 6-minute break, and then we get to try some of this out. Now, we didn't do a role play this morning, right? So, let's save some time in that 6 minutes, because who needs 6 whole minutes, right? Make sure you, as a client, write out your goal, whatever your current goal is for this class. And if you had, because I asked you last time to come up with a homework assignment for yourself. So if you, and write down what your homework assignment was, and if you, oh yeah, I forgot. That's because I didn't write it down for you. But you guys are supposed to write it down. But write down your goal, and write, if you had a homework, write down your homework assignment so that we'll be all ready for the role play. So, 6 minutes, and we'll be ready for role play.